Dikembe Mutombo passing away at the age of 58 from brain cancer. Hall of Famer, legend at Georgetown. You know, I say it all the time when I'm Mutomboing it.
Yeah.
So Dikembe Mutombo dead at the age of 58, and we'll talk about that as the show rolls on. And Joe Platania, friend of our show, passed away a week or so ago and was paid tribute at M&T Bank Stadium as he has followed the Ravens since their inception. We'll talk about Joey P later in the program also, but let's talk about what happened last night at M&T Bank. Not the easiest of transitions, but got to do what you got to do. From the Baltimore Banner, he is Kyle Goon. Kyle, good morning. Thanks for joining us here on Vinny and Haney.
Hey, guys. Thank you. Yeah, dragging a little bit this morning after a late night leaving M&T about 1:30. I'm sure some people stayed later, but I think Baltimore fans are buzzing about this team after last night.
And we saw, and we talked about it, Kyle, in the opening of the show, this air quotes identity of the offense last 2 weeks. Wow, you put up 28 points, 35 points, went on the road, then went at home against an undefeated team, and your running back has gained almost 300 yards. Your quarterback's quarterback rating has been over 130 in both weeks. Is this a sustainable identity if, in fact, this is the identity of the offense?
I mean, I think, yeah. I think, honestly, this was the offense that I was kind of picturing the Ravens would start out the season with. And, you know, I don't know if it was the offensive line. I don't know if it was, you know, just trying to get Derrick Henry ingrained. I don't know if maybe they just kind of looked at the first 2 weeks and results and said, hey, we got to change some things. Maybe all the above. But, you know, I just think this is kind of what the Ravens have to do just because of the personnel they have. They have a quarterback who is, you know, obviously a great passer as well, but just an electric runner. And that's sort of what makes him different from all the other quarterbacks in the NFL. And then they have the guy who's been the best running back over the last 8 years. And when you have those two guys, I just feel like necessarily your offense has to be geared toward the run gets established first and everything else flows out of that. And I think you saw the power of that last night.
Do you think that Rosengarten is the right tackle from here on out?
I definitely think he has a case. I mean, you know, we all kind of remember that first week against the Chiefs when Chris Jones turned Roger into a turnstile and he admitted that he had the yips. You know, I think it will come down to, you know, how healthy is Andrew Voorhees. But, you know, I think the Ravens like Patrick McCary in that role where they can kind of flex him around, spin him into guard, spin him to a tackle, and just play him everywhere. I mean, you know, Ronnie Stanley said yesterday he's a unicorn. He's played all five positions of offensive line since he's been with the Ravens, and I think that's kind of the preferred role for Patrick, and you know, hopefully you're hoping that Roger Rosengarten is your future right tackle.
Yeah, I thought Rosengarten played well last night. I thought Falele, you know, does a nice job. In the run stuff, I think Falele does well. And he looks like he's in better shape. He's moving better. He just looks better. And then McCary, I thought McCary was okay. Voorhees was not good against Dallas, I didn't think, in a run game. So if they can get him going, then I think they would have the situation that you're talking about.
Yeah, and I mean, this whole thing has been a work in progress, right? I mean, even since the preseason, I think we all understood that there would be, I mean, Eric Costa said it himself, there's going to be some hiccups, and boy, was he right. But, you know, I think everyone we're talking about is young. Roger's young. Andrew Voorhees is in his first year being healthy. And that just takes time. Daniel Falele is still fairly young in his career. It just takes time to kind of find their roles, find their new positions, figure out the responsibilities. But with the talent that the Ravens have, especially in their backfield, I just don't see a situation where they don't get to a respectable level by season's end.
I thought both coordinators had their best game calling last night.
Yeah, yeah. And honestly, as good as the offensive was, I think it was even bigger for Zach Orr
big time
to kind of show his upside. There were a lot of questions coming in as one of the worst pass defenses in the NFL, right? And you know, when you have a guy like Mike McDonald who was so effective, who had the Ravens running on top gear all of last season. There's a lot of questions, but most of the people I had talked to in the locker room, you know, I wrote about Zach Orr last week, and a lot of players told me, listen, he's out there taking accountability. He says, I have to call plays faster. I have to get better at this. But we don't think what we're doing wrong is his fault. Ultimately, we get to go out there and execute what Zach is telling us to do. And I think a lot of things just clicked into place this week.
Yeah. The only thing I would say to that is it's the exact same players that were playing the year before, and they didn't have the issues. That would be my response to that.
Yeah. And you know, look, anytime you change coaching, and this is Zach's first time calling plays on defense, I think there's just different communication things to work out. I mean, I think most of some of the gaps in the pass defense have been about communication, about guys, you know, not covering certain receivers or not handing off coverage in the right way. And yesterday, you kind of see the pass rush on. But also the pass rush was on because the secondary was so effective. So I think they're getting to that place where things are gelling under Zach Orr.
What was the, I'm sure the mood in the locker room was outstanding last night. What were some of the players talking about last night? You know, like Van Ooy, you know, because he's playing so well right now, and he looks like he's in really good shape and moving very fluidly.
Yeah. You know, my colleague Gianna Hahn wrote about this on the Baltimore Banner, and David Ajabo was telling her, this guy is, I don't know, 39, 40 years old. He's really 34 or 33 rather, but he's out there. He has 6 sacks on the season. It's kind of unbelievable. And what Kyle has told us earlier this season was last year when the season started, he wasn't on a football team, and that really affected him. It really took it personal, and he really didn't feel good about that. And I think you see him showing up at minicamp, doing things this offseason with the team, coming in and really setting the tone in these last 3 games. I think that says a lot about Kyle's motivation to prove at 33 he is still a top-level pass rusher.
Kyle Goon, Baltimore Banner, joining us, Vidi and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. Kyle, last thing for you, looking ahead to Cincinnati Sunday there, then Washington all of a sudden, first place in their division. They come the following week, and then you go on a Monday nighter down to Tampa where Baker Mayfield, outside of that Denver debacle, he's been playing like an MVP himself. Could we possibly see the Ravens over the next 3 weeks start to separate themselves a little bit from the rest of the North, especially if they beat Cincinnati, because Cleveland looks like they stink. Pittsburgh, all right, whatever, they're 3-1, but, you know, with all sorts of concerns there. Could Baltimore over the next 3 weeks really start to make a difference here in the division?
I think so. I really do think Baltimore, by talent, is the best team in the AFC North this year. And I think they have the chance to prove it. And, you know, I'm sure you are, Vinny, I'm already thinking ahead 2 weeks when Jaden Daniels comes to Baltimore and seeing an all-time Maryland showdown for the first time in, gosh, I don't know how many years that game is going to be relevant. But I think taking care of business against Cincinnati has to be number one. I mean, it's the Ravens' first AFC North game this season. We all know that AFC North games, no matter what it looks like on paper, they tend to be these, you know, blood and guts affairs. and I don't think the Bengals are going to let the Ravens out easy coming in to Cincinnati. So that has to be number one, even though I think all of us are really excited to see Jaden Daniels, Lamar Jackson, possibly the future of the league versus its reigning MVP. I can't lie. I'm really excited to see that game in 2 weeks.
All right, Kyle, Orioles, Royals, what happens starting tomorrow?
Oof. Yeah, I think actually probably the Orioles got the better opponent in that series. You know, the Detroit Tigers have just been so hot since All-Star break. But I just like the way that the Orioles have played in the last week. Feels like their power is coming back. They're hitting balls over the fence again. I love Corbin Burnes and Zach Eflin as game 1 and 2. I think the Orioles want to sweep. I mean, it's the best of 3, so you got to be quick, and you have your best 2 starters coming out, maybe the 2 best starters in the series. So I think the Orioles will take this round, but they really got to get it in 2, because you don't want to go into game 3 with, you know, possibly Dean Kramer as your starter and just not really sure after last season about feeling that anxiety. not getting a win at all in the postseason. You don't want a repeat of that.
It's Kyle Goon, Baltimore Banner. It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. Kyle, always appreciate the time. Enjoy the rest of your Monday, and we'll see you down Camden Yards starting tomorrow.
Yeah, see you guys tomorrow.
There's Kyle Goon, everybody. It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. We'll talk more Orioles, Royals, Matt Wyrick from the Baltimore Sun, bottom of the hour. But the whip around's coming up next. We'll look back at Maryland's loss to Indiana, and then an exciting Alabama-Georgia game. I'm always of the mindset, just get blown out. Then you come back, take the lead, then you lose a heartbreaker. What's better?
Vinny and Haney's Whip. Brought to you by Box Hill Pizzeria and Crab Cakes. The best crab cakes in Harford County. 105.7 The Fan.
Time for the Whip Around. Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan here on this lovely Monday in Baltimore. Well, the weather's not all that great, but the Ravens blow out Buffalo. They're 2-2. Orioles start a playoff series tomorrow against Kansas City. First time they've made the playoffs in back-to-back years since 1996-97, before we even knew who Monica Lewinsky was. That's how long ago that's been, with old Bullet Bill Clinton running the White House. But we're not here to talk about politics. We're here to talk about some sports. So some cool stuff is happening, except for what happened Saturday in Bloomington, Maryland at the Hoosiers, and this kind of took place.
And Rourke gets the shotgun snap. It will run left. Turns the corner at the 10, at the 5, and into the end zone for the touchdown, Indiana.
Curtis Rourke, the Hoosiers had zero turnovers going into that game.
Yep.
They turned the ball over four times against Maryland, and Maryland turned them into 0 points. Curtis Rourke threw the three touchdowns, did throw two picks, but Lawton, he had a touchdown, 93 yards. Allison, he also scored. Second half, Indiana was just kind of having their will against Maryland. In the fourth quarter, it just, Maryland went a long time without getting any offense generated. Billy Edwards wasn't bad at all. 26 of 41 for three touchdowns. Hemby rushed for over 100 yards. Ty Felton got hurt in the first half, didn't come back after three catches. So Maryland, they fall to 3-2, 10 more penalties, a lot of self-inflicted damage, which is like broken record stuff. Unfortunately, they get the week to lick their wounds. But Vinny, we were talking about it with Damon when he was on, Damon Evans, last Wednesday. We've talked about it. This could have been a swing game. I mean, the Michigan State game was one that got away. This is the makeup, if you will.
Right.
They lose this one. Now they get Northwestern in a couple of weeks. I don't know. I'm feeling pessimistic that things can turn around for them, because they can't seem to put every phase together at the same time.
They self-destruct. That's the problem. Is, I mean, you know, with the penalties. And Bob, it's every year. It's just they always kill themselves with penalties. And the offensive line was hoofed up.
Well, and dumb penalties, too, taunting. Yeah. Offensive line guy pancakes the Indiana guy and then rubs his testicles on his face, crawling over him, and then the illegal this, personal foul that. It's just this lack of control sort of penalties that do them in. Now, they profile like they're the 76 Raiders. You know what I mean? And you got to earn a little status, I would think. So Terps lose a tough one at that. Hoosiers 5-0 for the first time since 1967.
Yeah, and Bob, they got Northwestern this week. So, I mean, they're going to be, I'm sure they're favored.
By two touchdowns.
Yeah, they're going to be 6-0. How about that? I mean, that's an awesome story, I think. Cignetti came in from James Madison. He brought in, what, half the James? He brought in all the good James Madison players. And they've been playing exceptional football. They don't beat themselves.
Johnny Holiday, by the way, on the call. Maryland Football Network here. Big game. Saturday night, Georgia at Alabama for two quarters. Maybe into the third. It was puffy pants, hammer time. It was Dubois against Anthony Joshua. But Georgia got off the canvas. And not only did they counterpunch, they took the lead. And then Alabama said, enough of this.
And they take a downfield shot. And the catch is made. It's Ryan Williams, still spinning free. Touchdown, Alabama. They answer in one play.
Incredible game.
Oh, yeah.
41-34, Alabama holds off Georgia after blowing a 28-point lead in that game. Milroe, who was my preseason pick to win the Heisman. Not only did he have a big day with the arm, he also rushed for a couple of touchdowns over 100 yards. Williams, the young kid, he made the big play there. But an epic, epic ball game. And we talked about this last week with Chip Patterson. If this would have been 5, 10, 12, when we were growing up, Georgia would be done. They'd be like, all right, what bowl game are we going to? Because we're out of the national championship thing. Now these teams might play two more times before it's all said and done. But what a great, great entertaining game.
Bob, Paul Feinbaum said, yes, when I was watching it on Sunday on SportsCenter or whatever, he said he's been covering the SEC for 40 years. Best game he's ever seen in the SEC.
Wow. That's a big, big talk right there.
I mean, that was – and Bob, the receivers – 17 years old, Williams. 17.
So Alabama, by the way, with the win, they become number one in the AP poll. Texas there.
Yeah, do you think that was right?
It's a recency bias there, Vinny. Yeah. It's Vinny at 81.057, the Fan Whip Around here on this last day of September, are you kidding me, 2024. But on this date in Orioles history, how about 50 years ago today, Tiger Stadium, Earl Williams, Bobby Gritch both went yard. Mark Belanger and Brooksy both had two ribbies. Grant Jackson got the win, actually, in relief of Ross Grimsley as the Orioles on their way to the AL East. I think they clinch either tomorrow or the day after. Anyway, 12-6, Orioles over the Tigers. 2023, a year ago today, Oriole Park Camden Yards. Orioles beat the Red Sox 5-2. Tony Taters, two ribbies. Bruce Zimmerman gets the win. Orioles actually clinched the division the 28th. So that would have been 2 days ago. A year ago. And how about some Ravens history for you real quick? Let's go to 2001 at Denver. Elvis Gerbeck threw a couple of touchdown passes there. How about Kadri Ismail and Travis Taylor? Matt Stover kicked two field goals. Mike McCrary had two sacks as the Ravens, defending Super Bowl champs at the time, beat the Denver Broncos 20-13. When we come back, we'll preview the Orioles and Royals with Matt Weirich from the Baltimore Sun. Funhouse Trip, Nolan Regal, Mr. Electricity. Then we got news for the Nets coming up top of the hour. You want to join us for that? You can at 410-583-1057. We're going to hear from John Harbaugh. Kyle Hamilton had a big day last night, or a big night, if you will. Ronnie Stanley, Derrick Henry, Lamar Jackson. Hey, the Ravens are 2-2 with a bullet here on this Monday. As the Orioles close the season, winners up 5 of 6, here to talk about that and the upcoming series against the Kansas City Royals. Birds 2-4 against the Royals here in 2024. From the Baltimore Sun, let's welcome back to the show. It's Vinny Haney, Nolan McGraw, Matt Weirich. Matt, good morning. How are you feeling here on this pre-playoff Monday?
I'm doing good, fellas. A little rainy out. Hopefully that subsides here by this time tomorrow, but feeling good. October's almost here.
Now let's look at the Orioles in September. They win 5 of 6. They actually finish above 500 for the first time in a couple of months, because July and certainly August were not kind to them. They're as healthy, Matt. We just talked to Kyle Goon. Matt, as they've been in a couple of months, save Grayson Rodriguez and sweep aside from the Twins. They did take 2 out of 3 from New York, kind of imposing their will against the Yankees and the Bronx yet again. So how much better are you feeling about the Orioles than you were, say, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, I mean, just to get those guys back in the lineup, Ryan Mountcastle, Jordan Westberg, Ramon Urias, it's a huge boost for a group that really had been struggling. I mean, we know that the lineup at its strength is the way that this team wins baseball games. They have a good rotation. Their bullpen, I think it's deep, as maybe not top-end guys, but this lineup is the key to the team's success here in October. And I think that now that we're finally seeing it back pretty much at full strength, no Jorge Mateo, but everybody else who we thought would be in this lineup is in this lineup. I have to feel good about, their ability to score runs here in the postseason.
Now we look at it, Matt, Gunner's Gunner. And we've had other guys, Cedric starting to heat up a little bit. Westberg and Arias have certainly contributed since they've come back from injuries. But what about the recent surge of success for Ryan O'Hearn here? And James McCann had a good September. Outside of the normal, air quotes, people, some of the other players starting to pick it up here at the exact perfect time for Brandon Hyde.
Yeah, I think O'Hearn's boost is huge, particularly because the Orioles would be facing a right-hander in both games 2 and 3 of this wildcard series. So you'd imagine Ryan O'Hearn would be in the lineup, and an important part of that lineup, probably in the top five, in a position to drive in runs. So the Orioles have relied on him all year. They knew that he would be that guy. He has turned out to be that guy once again. I think that, you know, back in spring training, there were some questions of, you know, was it a fluke? Should they have traded Ryan O'Hearn? Why his value was high? But it's clear this team really values his ability to platoon with Ryan Mountcastle. And, you know, I think that no matter who is in that first base lot, they're going to have the platoon advantage early in games, and I think that's going to be a huge boost for this offense.
Yeah, going up against his former team, too. The Royals, by the way, is Ryan O'Hearn. Matt Weirich, Baltimore Sun, talking Orioles and Royals as that playoff series begins tomorrow at 4 o'clock down at Oriole Park, Camden Yards. Now, we look at the potential roster here. Suarez pitched yesterday, pitched well after a shaky September. Where does he fit in into the wild card round, or is he a guy that might get sacrificed, Matt, looking ahead to the division series against the Yankees, assuming the Orioles get there?
Yeah, I think the fact that he went six innings yesterday was pretty telling that he's not going to be available on the roster. Obviously, you know, anyone who's seen Albert Suarez pitch this year knows that he's been a huge part of this rotation, and I think it's so much so that he is their number one option should they have to go to three games here in the wild card round to start game one of the ALDS against the Yankees. Yes, you want your best 26 guys to be on the roster for this series, but at the same time, this allows them to keep Abe Povich potentially on the playoff roster as somebody who, with a very righty-heavy rotation that they'll be rolling out, can, if a starter needs to be pulled early, offer a left-handed side, a different look at the for the Royals, and certainly, you know, putting them in a position where they might have to make some pinch-hitting decisions earlier in games than they might want to, and could set up their bullpen for success later on. So, you know, the Orioles here are going with a very lefty-heavy pen. It's almost more lefties, five lefties to four righties in this bullpen, which is a very unique setup that they'll have. But certainly, I think with the guys that they have there, Colin Selby probably being the other guy who won't be making this team, they feel pretty good about, you know, the roster they kind of has assembled here over the last few weeks.
Now, you got Cole Reagans tomorrow, left-hander for Kansas City. James McCann, as we mentioned, he's been heating up a little bit, but Kansas City can get there on the base pass. Bobby Witt is a premier base stealer. Could we expect to see McCann not just start behind the dish tomorrow, but moving forward here against the Royals ahead of the Yankees? Adley's bat's going to be part of the equation, but could we expect to see McCann behind the plate? Is he the de facto personal catcher for Burns anyway?
You know, I think it's in play for game one, certainly with a lefty Reagans on the bump. You know, something that they did throughout the year. I think part of that was just trying to keep Adley Rutschman off his feet maybe throughout the season. But now that this is the postseason, I do have to wonder if they want to use that DH spot for maybe a more potent right-handed bat. I mean, if you can have Adley behind the plate, then that kind of allows you to get Emmanuel Rivera or Austin Slater into the lineup, which is something I think that would really lengthen it against Reagans and potentially wear him down early. So, you know, McCann has played well down the stretch to his credit, and perhaps, you know, they view him as somebody who can come up with a big hit here in the postseason. But I think the safer bet would be to have Adley behind the plate and go with somebody else at DH.
Hey, Matt, what are the strengths of the Royals going into this series?
It's definitely pitching, starting pitching for sure. I mean, not just Cole Reagans at the top, but Seth Lugo, leading the league in innings this year. A true workhorse for the Kansas City rotation, having a breakout late in his career, an awesome story. And Michael Wacha, I think, is also a very underrated starter. He would go opposite Dean Kramer in Game 3. So if the Royals are going to win this series, it's going to be behind the strength of their rotation. Their lineup, maybe the word pesky can be used for them, but it's not very deep and certainly lacks, you know, the kind of thump that the Orioles do. I think something to watch is whether or not Vinny Pasquantino, their first baseman, does come back. He was ruled out basically for the season a month ago, but has progressed earlier than expected, faced live hitters yesterday, is expected to do so again today, and could be activated for this series. That would be a huge boost to some kind of lineup protection for Bobby Witt Jr. So, you know, their bullpen, a little bit suspect. Lucas Ercig, their closer, is good. They got him at the deadline, but other than that, not a whole lot of trustworthy options. So really, it comes down to starting rotations. Does Burns over Matt Reagans? Can Zach Eflin go up against Seth Lugo? I think that will go a long way in determining the series.
If the Orioles win the series, who's going to be the guy? Who is the one that you're going to be talking about on Friday?
I think it's going to be Jordan Westberg. You know, we've seen him sitting at the top of the lineup here this last week. They're certainly not easing him back in by any means. They're basically throwing him to the wolves. And, you know, I think he's somebody who's responded to situations like that throughout the year. He's been somebody who provided a lot of steady offensive production when he was healthy. And now that he's back in the lineup, I have to think that, you know, they're going to lean on him once again. You know, Gunner's Gunner, we all know that. He's going to do some special things. But with the way that their lineup is constructed, I think that Westberg is probably the crux on which the offensive success of this team hinges.
Matt Weirich, Baltimore Sun. All right, get the crystal ball. What's happening Thursday? Are we going to be talking about the Orioles going to New York, or are we going to be stressing a Game 3 scenario with Dean Kramer on the Hill?
My official prediction is Orioles sweep. I think that they are the better team on paper. I think that their pitching matchups are pretty even, and but the Orioles have the biggest difference is in the lineups, and I think the Orioles are just so deep. You know, they struggled down the stretch, but I think that the little bit of momentum they got here over the last 2 weeks is palpable, and it's something they're going to feed off of and set up a series with Dean Kramer potentially going game one against the Yankees.
Matt Weirich, Baltimore Sun. Matt, appreciate the time as always. Enjoy Camden Yards over the next couple of days at least, and hopefully you'll be heading to the Bronx this weekend for the Yankees, because we all want some of that. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, sir. Thanks so much, man.
There's Matt Weirich, everybody. Baltimore Sun, Vinny at Haney, 105.7 The Fan. We got you covered tomorrow down at Oriole Park, Camden Yards, 12 o'clock. Got Tim Barbalace and Jason Lockefort, Jim Hunter. Then from 2 to 4, it is me, Ed Bordy, and Ryan Ripken, BBT of 3 to 4. Get you ready for first pitch. You can hear the Orioles and the Royals. You can hear the Orioles the entirety of their playoff run here on 105.7 The Fan. We'll come back. Have a little funhouse trip with Mr. Excitement, Nolan McGraw. He's got to be pumped. Ravens are 2-2. Orioles going to the playoffs. We're going to hear from him. And then we got news from the Nest coming up top of the hour as we talk about the Ravens' win last night. We're going to hear from Harbs and Lamar and the rest here on The Fan. Not only for getting swept last year by Texas, but Kansas City sweeping them. And the Orioles are big favorites in that series 10 years ago back in 2014. So we'll be talking about that in a big way moving forward. Maryland's 3-2, coming off that loss to Indiana. They get a break, a bye, and then Northwestern comes to town. And, you know, a crisis mode in College Park. We'll talk about that as the week progresses. But let's bring Nolan in. Nolan, how you feeling here on this Monday? It's got to be a victory Monday, I would assume. Unless you're a Maryland fan, which we are.
Yeah, but, you know, Nobody's perfect. I predicted that Indiana was going to win, so I wasn't sweating that one.
Son of a bitch.
Wasn't sweating that one.
I picked Indiana,
yeah,
too.
I took the Terps.
We'll get to it later.
Yes.
But I thought it was funny, you know, with all the Derrick Henry stuff, his usage these past couple weeks, rolling him out there, you know, 24 carries last night, 25 against Dallas. And you remember after the loss to Vegas, you know, Harbaugh was being asked about usage and everything. You know, Derrick Henry, you haven't really given him a full workload yet. One could argue that he should have got it late in the Raiders game, but things started to get out of hand and they stopped running the ball. But
when he jumped off sides.
Right, right. But Harbaugh's comments were, well, we didn't bring him in here to carry the ball 30 times a game or something to that effect. I'm paraphrasing.
Right.
Next two games, not 30 carries, but 24 and 25, well over 100 yards, over 150 yards in both games, touchdowns galore. Heavy of a workload as you're going to see for a running back in today's age. So, and they get the wins. So, I mean, Harbaugh, to his point, I guess it still stands. He's not going to carry that much in every game this year, at least I don't think. But that seems to be the key to success. Why divert from that?
Yeah, well, the thing about it was he had 9 carries in the first half. And when you're up, I mean, he's the closer. I mean, that's why he's there. And if he has those many carries, they're going to be fourth quarter carries. I mean, how many carries did he have in that fourth quarter? Like no yards minus one. There was quite a few of those when they were trying to get him the 200. But he had 15 carries in the second half. And to me, that if they're winning and if they're good, he's going to have a lot of second half carries and a lot of fourth quarter carries.
And not to nitpick, but after he had another big run, they get down in the goal line before his fumble. Even the play, when they got down there inside the 5, he just kind of got stood up and dropped for a loss, I think. Maybe 3 or 4 yard loss. And Stanley was kind of barking at him. I don't know what the issue was. Maybe he took exception with Stanley's blocking or something, but it was almost like, hey, you ripped that big run. You can't get one more yard and get in the end zone. Then he fumbles, but, right. You know, it happens. No harm, no foul.
That is kind of nitpicking, though. I got to be honest with you.
Yeah.
And luckily, they recovered the fumble, though, or it could have been more of a talking point for sure.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt about it. And I mean, like you had said earlier, Bob, you know it's going your way when you're recovering fumbles in the end zone and stuff, too.
Well, that wasn't just like a bounce, though. It was a cheesesteak sub or something, huh?
I mean, he fought for that. It wasn't like it just bounced into his arm.
Rosengarten like, had the best shot at it, and then all of a sudden, you saw where McCary was and says, you know, must have squirted out because it was raining. Mm-hmm. So I guess it probably squirted out.
I mean, watching the replay, it just looked like you could see Ricard. He's laying, he got blocked or he's blocking. Right. He's laying on the ground and he's a couple feet away from a scrum that's already building. And he just army crawls his way in there and comes out with the ball. Hell of a play.
Yeah. Got time for a fun house or no?
I'll tell you what we do have time for.
What do we got here?
We're giving away tickets to, you're going to like this, Metallica.
Yeah.
They are going to be at Northwest Stadium. That's the Commander Stadium. Yeah. I didn't know that was the name, Northwest Stadium. But May 25th, next year, Metallica is going to be there. We're giving away tickets to see them all week long. It starts today. I got two tickets, giving them away right now. I'm looking for caller number 7, lucky number 7, at 410-583-1057.
It's Metallica. I think Limp Bizkit is in there and another band whose name's escaping me.
Oh, right, so it's big rundown, big show.
Is it Northwest, Kanye West kid's name? You're a big Ye fan,
yeah,
aren't you? Or Ye?
First name North.
Last name West.
It's his daughter.
Look, there you go. There's Nolan McGraw, a big Ye. You still a Ye fan or you're
you
tap Yay?
Not Ye.
Yay! You still had anyway, Metallica tickets coming your way. Just call, do what Nolan said, and we'll send you to Rock and Roll in May. We'll come back, news from the nest. Gonna hear from John Harbaugh, Lamar Jackson, Derrick Henry, among others, as the Ravens win handily on national TV and Buffalo, their first loss of the season. We'll count that dough, hopefully at 12:15. A little buy or sell coming your way. And what's he? Brian DiArda, CBSSports.com. We'll talk about the NFL 4 weeks in almost. We'll talk about tonight's games as well. And if I lunch, 1 o'clock, American League East and Beyond report coming up at 1:15. Because it's interesting, the matchups here. If the Mets lose game one, Severino's going to start game two. If the Braves lose game one, Chris Sale's going to start game two. We'll explain those scenarios and we'll look at the picks. They were pretty good and bad, whatever that means. You'll find out at 1:30.